Chapter 7.
There is satisfaction in defeating an enemy, but one must never allow oneself to become complacent. There are always more enemies to be identified, faced, and vanquished. All warriors understand the need to face and defeat the enemy. Both aspects of the task can be challenging. Both can require thought, insight, and planning. Failures in any of those areas can cost unnecessary time and irreplaceable lives. But a warrior may forget that even the task of identifying the enemy can be difficult. And the cost of that failure can lead to catastrophe.
Eli had occasionally warned Thrawn of the presence of politics within the Navy. They'd certainly seen evidence of that influence during the Orbar incident. Now, once again, politics had arisen that could directly affect them.
"I wasn't able to get anything on why Captain Virgilio was replaced,"
Eli murmured, as they followed the procession of officers escorting the new commander, Captain Filia Rossi, on her tour of the Blood Crow.
"But everyone agrees that Rossi's very well connected. Nowadays, that's all you need to get a command."
"I see," Thrawn said.
Eli grimaced.
"I see."
That was Thrawn's go-to answer when he didn't want to say anything else. There was certainly plenty that he could say. Starting with the kind of Captain Rick Virgilio had been. He'd been excellent at his job, walking the necessary balance between standing orders and flexibility. In the 18 months Eli and Thrawn had served under him, the captain had built up a fine reputation for trapping smugglers, rendering aid to distressed vessels, and defusing potentially damaging political situations on mid-rim and outer-rim worlds. He'd earned the respect of his officers and crew, and highly satisfactory reviews from the governors and other political leaders with whom he'd interacted. Equally important, certainly from Eli's and Thrawn's point of view, Virgilio had taken in stride the presence of an alien officer on his ship. There had been a degree of tension during the first few weeks as Virgilio tested the limits of Thrawn's intelligence, knowledge, and ability. But once the captain learned his new officer's parameters, Eli could detect no difference in the captain's treatment or acceptance of his second weapons officer. When the position of first weapons officer opened up, he'd raised no objections to Thrawn being promoted to that position. In fact, ship's gossip had suggested that Virgilio might have actually recommended the Chiss for the job. Now, without warning or explanation, Virgilio had been removed from the Blood Crow and a younger, less experienced captain brought in. There was little that Eli had been able to learn about the new captain. Filia Rossi had graduated from the Wraithall Academy 12 years earlier, and had spent most of her time since then on Socorro, first on the ground, then aboard an orbiting defense platform out in the system's asteroid belts. For the past year, she'd been first officer aboard an ore freighter escort. Now suddenly, she'd been promoted to command of a cruiser. It seemed obvious that the decision had been based on politics and influence rather than merit or even seniority. Still, Eli was willing to give Rossi the benefit of the doubt. It was possible that the driving force was less political status than the simple result of personnel transfers. If Captain Virgilio had been promoted to a better, more prestigious command, then someone else had to be brought to the Blood Crow to take his place. But if that was the case, news of Virgilio's promotion had not been passed to the Blood Crow's other officers. Such silence from the High Command lent additional weight to Eli's suspicions that the former captain had been retired, or even quietly dismissed.
Still, there must necessarily be a first command in every officer's career,
Thrawn said into Eli's thoughts.
I suppose, Eli conceded. I just don't see why her first command has to be on our ship.
Ahead, the captain and the short line of officers trailing behind her had reached the number 2 storage bay. The captain hit the hatch release and stepped inside. First Officer Nels Daland close behind her. Eli winced.
"Uh-oh,"
he murmured. The rest of the officers knew what it meant, too. They began drifting to both sides of the passageway, making room for Thrawn to pass when the expected call came. The wait was barely 10 seconds.
"Thrawn!"
The captain's voice boomed from inside the storage bay.
"Get in here now!"
Captain Rossi and Senior Lieutenant Daland stood at one side of the storage bay.
Rossi's facial glow is increasing. Her eyes narrowed in a frown. Daland stands motionless, his face showing a partially masked expression of discomfort.
"Senior Lieutenant Daland tells me this is yours,"
Rossi said, pointing at the equipment stacked along the bulkhead.
"It is, Captain."
"You mind telling me what the hell it's doing taking up space on my ship?"
"He found it in a scrap market we were investigating for smuggler activity,"
Daland put in.
"As I mentioned earlier,
Your name, Lieutenant Thrawn?"
Rossi cut him off.
Her facial glow increases. Her stance is stiff, her fingers moving slightly.
No, ma'am."
"Then shut it! I asked you a question, Lieutenant."
"As Senior Lieutenant Daland said, the parts were in a scrap market," Thrawn said. "They are antiques, remnants of the Clone War."
"I know what they are,"
Rossi growled, looking at the piles again.
"Droidica, buzz droid, 2 buzz droids, half a stat."
Her eyes narrowed.
"Is that part of a hyperdrive ring?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"These aren't antiques, Lieutenant."
Rossi snorts, her lips curling down briefly.
"These are junk."
"Perhaps, ma'am," Thrawn said. "However, as I am not fully familiar with the technology of that era, I hope to gain insight by studying them."
"And maybe get them working again?"
Rossi asked.
"Don't deny it. I can see fill-ins on both buzz droids. Brand new components."
She raises her eyebrows. Her finger movements intensify briefly.
"They'd better not be components from the Bloodcrow stores."
"No, ma'am," Thrawn said. "They were purchased elsewhere."
"At his own expense,"
Daland murmured.
"Senior Lieutenant Daland is correct," Thrawn said. "The buzz droids in particular struck me as potentially useful. They are compact, with specialized drilling and cutting tools that allow them to..."
"Spare me the lecture!"
Rossi cut him off.
Her hand makes an abbreviated slash through the air. The pitch of her voice lowers.
"You may have read about the Clone Wars, but some of us lived it. And Virgilio just let you bring this stuff aboard?"
"Captain Virgilio permitted me to purchase them. Yes, ma'am,"
Thrawn said.
"He also gave me permission to store them here when I was not working on them."
"Very generous of him," Rossi said. "It may have caught your attention that Virgilio isn't captain anymore. I am. And I run a clean ship. I want this garbage dumped before your next watch. Clear?"
Beside her, Daland stirred.
His stance indicates disagreement.
Ma'am, if I might suggest..."
"I asked if that was clear, Lieutenant."
"Yes, Captain," Thrawn said. "May I offer an alternative?"
"If I didn't want to hear from my first officer, what makes you think I want to hear from you?"
Rossi countered.
"Senior Lieutenant Daland, you'll see that he dumps it as ordered. We're done here."
"Yes, ma'am."
Daland remains standing where he is, making no indication of preparing to leave the bay.
"With your permission, ma'am, I'd like to hear Lieutenant Thrawn's suggestion."
Captain Rossi's eyes narrow further, as she stares at Daylan. Her arms are stiff beneath the uniform sleeves, her fingers now motionless, her stance leaning slightly forward. Senior Lieutenant Daylan's expression is tense, but his stance indicates firmness. Captain Rossi straightens slightly.
Apparently, no one aboard understands proper respect for their captain, she said, her voice stiff. We'll have to deal with that.
She turned back to Thrawn.
Fine. Let's hear this alternative.
It is my understanding, ma'am, that material aboard an Imperial war vessel is the property of that vessel, and thus under control of the commander, Thrawn said. When I bought these items for 500 credits...
500 credits?
Rossi interrupted.
Are you serious? Those things aren't worth a tenth that.
That would be correct, Captain. Were these standard buzz droids?
Thrawn said.
But they are of the Mark I version. Quite rare. And apparently quite valuable.
Really?
Rossi looks at the buzz droids, her lips pursing.
How valuable?
When I bought them, they were non-functional, Thrawn said. As you have noted, I have made some progress in repairing them. I would expect that once they are fully restored, they will be quite valuable to collectors.
Collectors?
Rossi's tone is flat.
People with more money than brains.
Some also merely have an interest in Clone War antiquities, Thrawn said. I am told there are members of the High Command with such interests.
Rossi's lips part slightly, her stance straightening. She gazes again at the buzz droids, the muscles in her cheeks tensing, then relaxing, then tensing again. Her fingers are in motion, the thumb and forefinger of her right hand rubbing gently together.
Mark ones, you said?
I did. Mark ones, she murmured.
Her voice carries the mix of tension and interest that indicates sudden understanding. Her hand makes a small movement toward her data pad, then stops.
All right. I'll meet you halfway. We're due back at Ancyon in 3 months. You can have until then to play with your toys. Once we reach Ancyon, I'm taking them, working or not. Clear?
Clear, ma'am, Thrawn said. Thank you.
Rossi looks at Daylan, then at the droids. The tension lines in her face smooth out. She brushes past Daylan to the bay's exit.
At your convenience, Senior Lieutenant Daylan,
she called back over her shoulder.
Yes, ma'am.
Daylan gives a small smile of satisfaction, then follows the captain back into the corridor. They continue aft, the rest of the officers again forming up behind them.
Well? Vanto asked quietly as he reached the bay.
His expression holds both anticipation and dread.
Is she making you throw it all out?
Why would you assume that?
Because Virgilio let you have it. And Rossi's going to try to wipe every trace of him off the Blood Crow,
Vanto said.
His voice holds a low level of bitterness.
Trust me, I've seen her type a lot.
Interesting,
Thrawn said.
As it happens, she has agreed to allow me until the end of our current patrol to bring the items to full function.
Generous of her. I presume there's a catch?
I reminded her that they would become her property.
Ah,
Vanto said.
He nods in understanding.
And you remembered what I said back when you first got them about collectors and non-intrinsic value?
I did. I thank you for that insight.
You're welcome,
Vanto said.
I don't suppose you happened to mention that the buzz droids were already fully operational.
She did not ask. But I believe she also came to a belated realization
that they have a value beyond even the non-intrinsic lure to collectors. Do you remember a metal called Dunium from our technical classes?
Oh, I knew Dunium long before I got to Royal Imperial, Vanto said. Dad always put on extra security whenever we were lucky enough to carry a crate or two of the stuff. But there's no Dunium in buzz droids.
There was in Mark I models, Thrawn said. It was a shell protecting the brain core. It was removed in later models because the cost outweighed the defensive benefits. So rare and intrinsically valuable, Vanto said. He nods in understanding.
You say the captain figured out that last part herself?
I believe so. She reached for her datapad, presumably intending to confirm her memory of the Mark I construction, but then changed her mind.
Didn't want to make a big deal of it in front of everyone, Vanto said.
She'll wait until she's alone.
He smiles with cynical amusement.
And then we'll no doubt congratulate herself on her memory and insight on putting one over on her poor, naive weapons officer.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. And we should probably rejoin the others.
Right.
Vanto starts down the corridor at a quick walk.
Hopefully Daland also won't mention the droids are functional. If he does, Rossi will probably take him right now, and you won't get to fiddle with him anymore.
He said nothing at the time.
Good for him, Vanto said. Of course he does owe you. Getting blindsided when those Delphidians made a run for it could have been embarrassing.
Possibly lethal as well.
Very possibly, Vanto agreed.
Thrawn!
A distant bellow echoed down the passageway.
I believe they have reached the electronics repair shop, Thrawn said.
And found the other part of your hyperdrive ring, Vanto said.
Yeah, we might want to hurry.
It took a week for Captain Rossi to come fully up to speed on her new command and to acquaint herself with her ship, her officers, and her crew. She was, Eli had to admit, pretty good at it. By the end of the second week, she was being spoken of with cautious acceptance by most of the crew and was well on her way to good working relationships with most of her officers, with two glaring exceptions. Eli, of course, was the second one. The most frustrating part was that he'd predicted the problem right from the start. The captain had an aide, non-human Lieutenant Thrawn had one, and no one else aboard ship did. It wasn't proper protocol. It certainly wasn't proper tradition. And in the Imperial Navy, those two things were the bedrock on which everything else was built. It had taken Captain Virgilio some time to get used to the idea. It had taken Senior Lieutenant Daland even longer. Neither man, Eli suspected, had ever been really happy with it. Eli wasn't expecting Rossi to ever get used to it or accept it. Unfortunately, there were an infinite number of ways a commander could show her displeasure with something, or with someone. Sure enough, over the next month, Eli saw a clear pattern developing. Every nasty, dirty, or undesirable job somehow ended up on Thrawn's list. If it was a job that an officer couldn't legitimately be ordered to do, Thrawn would still be tasked with overseeing the procedure. And as Thrawn's aide, Eli was usually assigned the job right along with him. Thrawn took it with stoic good grace. Eli made sure his own annoyance was equally invisible. The slightest hint of insubordination, he knew, and Rossi would be on him like a tusked cat on a shock. So when the Blood Crow picked up a distress call from a freighter carrying a cargo of static-lock Tabana gas, Eli knew exactly who would be leading the boarding party.
If I understand correctly, Thrawn said, as Ensign Mary Barlin maneuvered their shuttle between the Blood Crow and the derelict freighter, Dromedar. The most disagreeable part of this duty is the dust
Yes, sir,
Eli said, looking at the man and woman sitting silently in the jump seats along the shuttle's walls. Neither of them looked particularly happy with their assignment either.
Electronics tech Lanio has had experience with static locking,
Eli continued, gesturing to the woman.
Care to elaborate on the problem?
As Ensign Vanto says, sir, there's dust,
Lanio said, her face wrinkling briefly with disgust.
A lot of it. Something about static locking brings the stuff out of every nook and cranny on a ship and deposits it neatly on your uniform and skin. You come out looking like a dirt miner.
It sticks to fabrics especially well, Engineering Tech Jakeeb added. You usually have to run your uniform through the cleaner twice to get everything out.
And we all know how Captain Rossi likes her crew to look sharp,
Barlin called back from the cockpit.
How does it affect electronic equipment? Thrawn asked.
Luckily, the dust is usually coarse enough not to get into properly sealed gear,
Lanio said.
Emphasis on properly. I've never seen a civilian transport yet where everything was up to proper code.
In fact, I'd bet 50 credits we don't find anyone aboard,
Jakeeb said.
Automated beacon, dead in space. Odds are they got dust in their hyperdrive, couldn't fix it, and took off.
I'll take that bet,
Lanio said.
Easy, Eli warned. No gambling aboard ship, remember?
But we're not aboard ship, sir,
Jakeeb said innocently.
This vessel is considered part of the Blood Crew, Thrawn said. If static locking has such serious disadvantages, why is it still used?
It's really only used with Tabana gas, sir,
Lanio said.
The stuff's highly explosive and highly valuable. Big draw for hijackers. Static locking the tanks makes stealing them a risky business.
Which means it'll be equally tricky for us if Captain Rossi wants them brought aboard,
Jakeeb warned.
Hopefully it'll just be a matter of fixing whatever's wrong and flying the whole freighter to Ancien.
There was a gentle bump.
We're here, sir,
Barlin reported.
Engaging locking collar. Okay, we're set. Atmosphere inside reading normal. Lights on low. Temperature mid-range, gravity functional and standard. Scrub is still running.
Lifeform readings?
Thrawn asked.
Nothing useful, sir,
she replied.
The static locking's still screwing all that up. Okay, scrub's finished. Negative on dangerous chemicals or microorganisms. We're good to go, Lieutenant.
Thank you,
Thrawn said.
Ensign Vanto, take Tex Lanio and Jakeeb aft to the engine section. Ensign Barlin and I will go forward to the bridge.
2 minutes later, Eli and the two techs were moving down the freighter's central passageway, their footsteps echoing in the gloom.
Really hate derelicts, sir,
Lanio muttered as they walked. Her hand, Eli noted, was resting on the grip of her holstered blaster.
Too many ghost ship stories when I was growing up.
I heard my share, too,
Eli said.
Most are just stories. The rest are real incidents embellished out of all recognition.
I'm sure this place will look a lot cheerier once Barlin gets to the lighting controls,
Jakeeb said helpfully.
Yeah, I don't think so,
Lanio growled.
All the light in the world.
Without warning, the corridor erupted in a blinding blaze of light.
Freeze!
A taut voice said from somewhere behind them.
You hear me? Freeze! Or I swear I'll shoot you where you stand!
Vanto's expression is wary as he comes into view. But the tension that was in his voice when he gave the alarm has subsided. He holds an unfamiliar blaster loosely in his hand.
Ensign Vanto, report,
Thrawn ordered.
Lieutenant,
Vanto said.
He gives a brief formal nod of greeting and acknowledgement. His fingers are half-curled in the silent signal that confirms all is indeed well.
May I present Neville Signy. He apparently mistook us for someone else.
Did he? Thrawn said. Signy is a human, with dark hair and the textured skin of one who has worked long years in bright sunlight. He sits on the deck at Vanto's feet. His torso is hunched forward, his face buried in his hands. His expression is largely hidden, but the tensed muscles in his neck and arms hold fear and weariness. His clothes are stained with the same dust that clings to the Imperial's own uniforms. His hands show the scarring and calluses of mild physical labor.
Whom did he mistake us for?
Signy? Vanto prompted.
Yes, sir, Signy said.
Still seated, he straightens up and lowers his hands. His face is well-fleshed, with no signs of malnutrition. The skin around his eyes is taut with stress, as are the muscles in his throat. His eyes are dark and wary.
Please believe that I thought you were...
He breaks off, and his eyes widen.
Lieutenant Thrawn asked you a question, Signy, Vanto said.
Yes,
Signy said.
He blinks twice and turns his eyes to Vanto.
Sorry, my name... No, you already know my name. Sorry. The thing is, we were attacked by pirates.
Who were they? Vanto asked. Did they mention any names? Were they wearing any kind of insignia?
No,
Signy said.
No names.
His lips twitch.
At least, nothing I heard. I sort of ran.
There is a brief silence.
Where did you run? Vanto asked.
There's a storage locker back there where Captain Fitz stores her private food stocks.
Signy angles his head behind him.
Specialized stuff she picks up along our route that she sells whenever she can make a profit. We used to pilfer it, taking from the back and keeping the front intact so she wouldn't notice as quickly.
Which left enough room behind the packages where you could hide?
I know what you're thinking,
Signy said.
His voice becomes harsh.
I should have stood with the others. Maybe fought. Maybe...
He broke off, his throat working.
And then they took them.
His voice drops in volume.
All of them. I heard someone say they were going to go back to their base and find a slicer to get the ship running. But they took everyone else with them.
What happened to the hyperdrive? Thrawn asked. I've got Lanio checking it out, Vanto said. Best guess is that someone locked it down before the pirates could get to it.
Yes, that was it,
Signy said.
Captain Fitz locked the hyperdrive. I heard them threatening her. Or maybe it was Toom, our engineer, who locked it.
He squeezes his eyes tightly shut.
I heard screams.
You thought we were the returning pirates?
Thrawn asked.
Yes.
Signy opens his eyes and waves one hand at Vanto.
I was scared. I didn't focus on the uniforms. I never thought anyone would hear the beacon or come looking anyway. When I saw who you were...
He trails off.
I guess I'm lucky you didn't just shoot me for pulling a blaster on you.
We have better self-control than that, Vanto said.
He looks at Thrawn.
Order, sir?
Contact the Blood Crow,
Thrawn said.
Signy buries his face in his hands again. The muscles in his hands are tight with tension.
Report the situation to the captain, and inform her I will be making a thorough examination of the ship.
Except for the power compartment, sir,
Lanio said as she joined them from around a corner.
There's a bad leak in the main reactor.
Oh, yes, don't go in there,
Signy said quickly.
He drops his hands from his face. His back stiffens as he looks up.
Sorry, I should have warned you about that.
It's okay,
Lanio said, her voice dry.
The indicators and hatch interlocks were a pretty solid hint.
Oh, right.
Signy sighs. his torso folds over again in a slump. And then tell her, Thrawn continued to Vanto, that I recommend bringing a full operational crew aboard while we attempt to restart the hyperdrive. If we are unable to do so, I recommend attempting to disengage the static locks so that the Tabana cylinders can be removed and transferred to the Blood Crow. Lanio's mouth drops open a few millimeters.
Yes, Vanto said cautiously. Sir, I suspect the captain will find your suggestions a bit excessive.
She may, Thrawn said. Signy's face is still hidden in his hands.
Nevertheless, those are my recommendations.
Yes, sir, Vanto said. I'll submit them immediately.
Thank you, Ensign, Thrawn said. While you do that, Teclanio will show me to the Tabana cylinders.
Lanio clenches her jaw firmly.
Yes, sir, she said. This way.